trustee meeting, Thursday, March 12th, 2020. At this time, I would like to know if there are any comments from the public. Seeing there are none, we will convene to a study session, item 3.1, and after study session, we will immediately go into our closed session, and we return to our regular session at 6:30. All right. Item 3.1, Board of Trustees Training, Impasse Procedures under the Education Employment Relations Act.
Hello, Bonnie. You're here?
I'm turning it over to the
What is the lady's name?
After we come back.
Hold on, let me find Joanna.
Because we're having a study session, we're going to do our roll call at this point. Okay, Trustee Hanson.
Present.
Loretta.
Trustee Corbin.
Way off.
Here.
Trustee Zito.
Loretta.
Present.
Trustee Welk.
Vanderpool.
And
sorry.
Trustee Mace is on the phone.
Present.
Okay. Bonnie Mace will be participating today, March 12, 2020, regular board meeting remotely via teleconference located at 5962 Valley Meadow Court, San Jose. Governor Newsom issued an executive order today that allows local and state legislative bodies to hold meetings via teleconference and to make meetings electronically. And I'd like to turn it over to our trainer, Loretta Vanderpool, at this point. Thank you.
Good evening, board and members of the audience. Thank you for taking the time to attend this study session. I'm going to be giving a presentation on the EERA, the Educational Employment Reform Act, and more specifically to the confidentiality requirements of impasse mediation and the state's evidence code. And please feel free to interrupt me if you have questions, and I will also take questions at the end. Is that good? Okay. All right, so the mediation requirements under the Educational Employment Reform Act, I've only excerpted the two parts that are relevant to what... Is that better? That is better, I can tell. Okay, so the Educational Employment Relations Act of 1976 is the employment statute that governs employee relations in the K-12 schools and the community colleges. It dovetails in with the Ed Code in that the Ed Code addresses the larger sort of meta issues related to running a school district, while the EERA is specific to how you conduct your employee relations. So I did give you the link to the full act online. And what we're going to be talking about can be found in Article 9 Impasse Procedures, subsections 3548 to 3548.8. And the two that are specific to mediation in that section are 3548 and 3548.1a. So I excerpted those entire paragraphs. If you want to go ahead and print those copies, you can. You can also find them online. But there are two sections that I've bolded that I want to draw your attention to. In section 3548, right in the middle of that section, there is a statement, the mediator shall meet forthwith with the parties or the representatives, either jointly or separately, and shall take such other steps as he may deem appropriate in order to persuade the parties to resolve their differences and effect a mutually acceptable agreement. That's very broad, and what that actually means is the mediator will use whatever standard mediation practices are necessary, which might involve very long sessions, it might involve a lot of caucuses, there might be some sideboards that are required, and there might be a lot of different kind of personality tactics that need to be used or techniques. Mediators are generally very adaptive, and they try to work as closely as possible to the local culture of the bargaining teams. If the mediator is not effective at achieving a settlement with the parties, it is up to the mediator to determine whether or not there needs to be a little bit of time and another mediation effort made, or if it's more appropriate at that point in time to release the parties to fact-finding. Under the EERA and HERA, the mediator has a gatekeeping role in contract impasse mediation. Okay, so the purpose of mediation is to, mediation is a form of alternate dispute resolution that really focuses on compromise. It is not an evidentiary hearing. It is not an arbitration. The mediator does not sit and listen to the parties in their separate caucuses and then make a decision about who's right and who's wrong. The mediator has no stake in the outcome whatsoever and really just wants to work the parties toward a compromise solution that works for both of them. To the extent possible, the mediator is going to be working to make sure that the settlement is the settlement of the parties, and will only start introducing mediation proposals or mediator proposals when those other proposals are not working. So there's a misconception about mediators. Quite a lot of times we find that the parties believe that they're there to advocate for one side or the other, and they are absolutely not. We try very hard to make sure that we protect good relationships if the parties already have good labor relations. If not, we certainly don't want to harm them and make them worse than when we found them. It's an art and not a science. It's very personality driven. So there are some standards of practice for mediation, but there is no one template to follow in any mediation. Any questions so far?
How's the mediator chosen?
I assign them. So if we get, I'm gonna go on to the process in a little bit, but I assign mediation, I assign mediators based on workload and geographic location. So we have people that live in different parts of the state. They work the entire state. So I take a look at what their caseload looks like. And if we have parties that have a preference for a particular mediator, I try to make sure that they get that mediator, because that really bodes well for a better outcome. Similarly, if there is a mediator that the parties absolutely do not want to ever work with again, I will certainly respect that. Because again, it's personality driven and we want you to have a good experience. Okay, so basic mediation and collective bargaining. The parties are in an adversarial relationship just by nature of negotiations. And by adversarial, I don't mean capital A, screaming adversarial. I mean the position is just naturally adversarial because you are wanting different things from each other. In your case, it would be the school district, the district would be the employer, and one of your employee bargaining units, whether it's the certificated or the classified side, that would be the employee organization side. In setting up mediation, prior to the meeting, the mediator will contact the parties to introduce himself or herself, find out where it is that the meetings are going to be held, start offering dates for scheduling, making sure that we have a good location, making sure that there are no time constraints. The schools have a long history of doing this really, really well. And these mediation sessions can be very, very long, but they're usually very productive. During the meeting, the mediator will usually have an opening joint statement to talk about how the process is going to work, to talk about the need, and not just the need, but the requirement for full confidentiality and why confidentiality during that process is so important. And during that time, the mediator, if the parties have some sense of urgency about how to communicate out to their constituents, the mediator may talk a little bit about what can be allowed and what is not allowed, and whether or not there's an agreement to joint communications at different junctures during the mediation process. The meetings themselves have no set time limit. We usually try to set them up when people don't have any time commitments or are at least available if they have to leave briefly to help make decisions for their team. And the mediator will start working through caucuses and exchanging proposals back and forth for quite a while until that stops being productive, and might start modifying the proposals himself, where he can see that there's a possibility of agreement to some changes to the way the proposals are initially being exchanged. The confidentiality of mediation really provides for a lot of creativity. There are a lot of discussions and what we call supposals that can be exchanged that nobody has to own if there isn't a good outcome to the mediation effort. So you have the chance to float a lot of balloons, you can test different ideas, and you can have discussions that you can't have in regular negotiations. Once you're in mediation, the confidentiality protects your ability to really be creative. And then you start working toward some kind of a settlement effort, and then the outcomes depend on whether or not you got the settlement. So, confidentiality in mediation is protected under the state's evidence code. And I put the citation in there with the link, but I also believe that you all have copies of the state's evidence code. Did you bring your copies with you? Okay.
Thank you, Kim.
So the state's evidence code does not just apply to the mediation that takes place in collective bargaining. This is the state's evidence code for all mediation that takes place, civil mediation, interpersonal mediation, family law mediation. All mediation is protected under the state's evidence code. Now, one of the sections that I've highlighted is, if you take a look at the, I believe it's the second page, page 204, section 1119. I think I bolded it or highlighted it on your copy. Do you have that? Okay. So, paragraph C, all communications, negotiations, or settlement discussions by and between participants in the course of a mediation or a mediation consultation, so that can be your setup phone calls with the mediator or pre-conference work, or it can be sidebar conversations that you have between meetings, shall remain confidential. And mediators are immune from being subpoenaed to testify. Their documents cannot be subpoenaed to be introduced into evidence for any formal proceeding. That said, we're often made aware that the parties went ahead and gave the mediator's proposal to a fact finder and said, well, look, this is what the mediator said was the best we could do. And sometimes the fact finder says, well, then why didn't you do that? But in any case, I know we're going to have some questions on the confidentiality part of this, but if you go through this section, there's part a little bit further down, section 1126 is on page 404. Anything said, any admission made, or any writing that is inadmissible, protected from disclosure, and confidential under this chapter before a mediation ends, shall remain inadmissible, protected from disclosure, and confidential to the same extent after the mediation ends. So, when you're under the umbrella of mediation, when an impasse has been declared, that whole span of time until you're released to fact-finding is covered by confidentiality. Now, there are times in the mediation process, if it's a very lengthy one, that the parties might feel the need to issue some kind of a communication because there are pressures being applied either from union members or from the community or from administrators, and it's believed that something needs to be shared. Well, you can't share specifics about what's going on in mediation. You just can't. I know that doesn't sit well, but it's protected. So what you can do is sit down and possibly issue a joint communication agreeing to make some statement like, we are continuing to meet and are making progress, or we're continuing to meet but progress has been very slow. We are not able to provide details. Please keep an eye on our website or something like that. But you cannot actually share information about what the progress is, it's just specifically. I know that this is probably the part of the presentation that you may have the most questions about, because a lot of board members will tell me that they don't know what to say when they're confronted out in the public by somebody at the supermarket or maybe an administrator at one of the sites who wants to start talking about the negotiations and expressing a personal opinion. I understand that, and I understand how difficult that position is for you, but you can't. You just really can't. So you're going to be committing an unfair labor practice, and really might be facing some pretty dire consequences if it continues. It's entirely fair as board, you're in your positions as board members, obviously because you care about the school district, if you care about the community and you care about the employees of the district. It's a fair thing to say that you do care about what's going on, but to assert that your position as the board is as an extension of management, and therefore you're not able to actually disclose details, and that's not gonna sit well sometimes if you feel like you're under attack. But the practical importance of confidentiality and mediation is that it does promote trust. If you don't have a good working relationship, you're gonna tank it even more if the other side doesn't feel like you're behaving in a trustworthy manner. If you are behaving in a trustworthy manner and you're not getting along, at least you're not gonna make it worse. Again, it promotes creativity throughout the process. It helps ratchet down the tension. The communications that keep going out only heighten tension, right? Especially if it's negative. Doesn't make you feel any better. So, and the confidentiality allows us in mediation to test the limits. So there might be proposals that were not considered because they thought they sounded too outlandish or too unusual, or maybe they were gonna set some kind of a precedent that you felt uncomfortable with. But when you have a chance to sit down and really vet them without having a spotlight on you that's public, you might find that with a couple of tweaks here and there that it might be a very workable proposal. So testing limits is a really good thing that happens in mediation. And it also protects your positions, and this part is important. If it turns out that the mediation effort is not successful and you have made movement during mediation, you're not giving anything up. It's as though the meeting never happened. So you get to go back to what your original positions were when you go into fact finding. Does that make sense?
I think the question is a timing issue, and what I mean by that is this. I have seen on both websites, the districts and the negotiating team's websites. This was their last offer, right? This was what they offered last. So is there a timing element to that? Because when something is put on a website, then that's public.
Once the impasse determination is issued and a mediator starts working with you, then anything that happens in mediation is confidential.
So anything up to that point is fair game.
Probably. I don't know. I'm not going to give legal advice. I'm not in that arm of PERB. And so I can't tell you whether or not you might be crossing a line, but certainly I have seen a lot of websites on both sides that put last, best, and final offers up or talk about what the tone of negotiations have been. Strategically, you've really got to, you know, think about where it is that you want to end up and whether or not it's worth just waiting the other side out sometimes, okay, when it gets adversarial. But the protection of your positions can be very, very important. You don't have to feel like the amount of movement that you made during negotiations on either side in mediation is going to hurt you when you go to fact-finding, because you also don't have the, you're also protected from having the other side say, yeah, but in mediation they said we would do this, this, and this. And now they're reneging on that. Well, there's no such thing as reneging on it. It just didn't happen, okay? Confidentiality requirements. So the sharing of information during mediation is very restrictive. It's restrictive both for the parties and for those who are directly responsible for bargaining authority. And so that would mean on the district side, you, the board, you're the extension of management in negotiations, and for your union teams, it would be their executive boards or whoever it is that's been designated officially to be giving guidance to the employee organization's positions. This process is ongoing, as we've already discussed. Whether or not you have a full or partial settlement also determines what it is that you can share. So once you have a full settlement, if everybody has signed off on it, you can share the settlement. You can't necessarily share the discussions that went into the settlement. If you want to share some part of it because you think it's going to be interesting to people and it might help, then talk to the mediator and craft some kind of a joint statement. And then if you don't get a settlement, as we've said, then it's all off the table. Enforcement and outcomes. The mediator has no enforcement ability. We're not going to file charges against either side, saying that you violated the state's evidence code. However, the parties have this as a mechanism. Employers can file unfair labor practice charges against employee organizations. Employee organizations can file them against employers, and individual employees can file them against the union and the employer. And so this, you know, there could be the issue of an unfair labor practice, and that would be how the enforcement would come about, but it wouldn't be by the mediator. Where the mediator does have a sort of indirect type of enforcement is that the mediator can leave the parties in suspense in a sort of a form of limbo until cooler heads prevail and you can take another stab at meeting and mediation again. The mediators will quite often walk away from a mediation where violation has been egregiously violated. The minor ones, we don't, that just happens. We have a really terrible problem nowadays with social media and what people are doing under the table with their phones and their laptops. But that said, generally, catching somebody once is enough to make it stop. If it's really egregious, quite often the mediator will walk away and say, we're going to meet again at another time. We're going to sit down and talk about the confidentiality problem in the meantime, and I'm not releasing you to fact-finding until we're satisfied that mediation is not going to be productive. But the parties themselves, as I've just stated, have the unfair labor practice process, and that's enforced by the Office of the General Counsel at PERB. So that's the end of that part of the presentation, and I told you it was going to be short. Do you have any questions? I think you wanted some discussion.
My concern is communication that occurs after mediation, or after mediation starts. Okay, so as I'm understanding you, whatever happens before mediation is, I mean, it's not enforceable from a PERB perspective. People can say what they want to say. Things can be presented and put on websites.
Well, I can't give legal advice, and I'm not able to say whether it's enforceable or not. Every situation has its own fact pattern.
So from the perspective that board members are elected by the public to represent the public in their best interests, if during the mediation process, okay, and I'll just say for the sake of discussion, rumors are stated that, oh, this has been offered and it's, you know, it's how dare they offer such a whatever, right? You know, whatever it might be. What does the district and by extension board members have the right to say to correct misinformation?
Again, not giving legal advice, but I am going to say, under the umbrella of mediation, you cannot do that publicly. So what I would recommend is that you contact the mediator and say, this is the information that's getting out. We don't know how it's getting out. Can you take this up and find out where it's coming from? But you can't issue public statements to correct information.
Suppose it's not even true at all. In other words, it wasn't even brought up in mediation.
Doesn't matter. I'm sorry, I know that's not a satisfying answer, but you're functioning as an extension of the management bargaining team. So those issues, it's very appropriate to bring it up with your chief negotiator in closed session and let the chief negotiator talk to the mediator. And maybe there needs to be a sidebar. It's not unusual to have a teleconference between the bargaining chairs and the mediator and maybe one or two members, and they can usually bring that under control. It is very, you have a very, very different set of circumstances on the employee organization side. You and I had a little bit of a talk about this, but depending on how large the employee bargaining unit is, there's always the possibility that the people at the table are trying to balance competing interests. And so they may find themselves having a bigger problem on their hands trying to manage rumors than even you could imagine. So. That's a different issue. Let the mediator try to address it, and maybe do that through your chief negotiator. But you don't want to issue public statements, even if it's something completely untrue. Any other questions, comments? Okay, well, that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.